Thank you. I am very nervous about taking my mask off. I have not been in a group since COVID began, so this is my first time, except when I'm with the Fagan family, which is my family back east, and they were the only ones I'm maskless with, so this is weird for me, but I don't want to be muffled. Jimmy Sabetic said to me once, well, actually, I'm lying. He said it to me many times, which was funny to me. You're not from around here, are you? Which was funny because I've lived here for over 40 years. But I am originally from New Jersey, and I guess I have an East Coast something about me, which he kept teasing me about. But I still miss Jimmy, and I was really appreciative that you read that beautiful poem. That was very touching. During COVID, I cheated on poetry. I just didn't want to write it anymore during COVID. I was living alone with my dog. I have no family out here and just want to tell stories. And unfortunately, we have beautiful narrative poets in Pittsburgh, but I'm not one of them. I want to sing in poems and I want to paint pictures in poems. And so I decided I had to write essays, and that's why I wrote my stories. And so I was very over the moon when I found out it's going to get published. So I have a couple of Pittsburgh poems here. The first one is called Tuesday Morning. Blue trucks driving too fast up Cromwell, the brick road around the corner from my house. 6:20 a.m. and he's all reckless disarray, blows through the stop sign. I'm glad the two little backpack boys aren't up and walking to school yet. It doesn't take much to set my teeth on edge anymore. This world's a careless place, a place without care more often than I'd like. But on the next block, Yvonne, who owns the florist shop in Wilkinsburg, is getting into her flower van, and she smiles and says, "You're up early." "Love my work," she shoots back without a trace of irony. So now my mind's turned back to all the flowering, dogwoods, pink and cream, mixing petals with the light rain. Much of this year, I felt broken, sewn up, unsure of what holds a soul together, unsure of what binds us to grace or strength in order to move forward. It's Tuesday morning in the rain. Each brick on the brick houses I pass shimmers dawn. My beautiful dog will need toweling off when we get home. On a neighbor's stoop, I'm suddenly surprised by the sight of two white cats. I name one Chaos, I name one Serenity. Thank you. My dog is terrified of those white cats. They actually always want to come up and greet him, and he's totally frightened of them. Pittsburgh Fugue. Before the moon scrubs grays from sky, we tried once more to make it right. The lights against the downtown PPG, more commerce now than castle. Three rivers flow against, within, they confluence and flatten with the barges progress on the moon. No better sight than bridge as far as sight can see, a galaxy of boats upon the star-filled swells. And in the blue-lit stadium, a roar has gone up, another score. And yet we can't find our way back. No road, no hacked-up trail. The incline's jaunty red stays silent on the south side slopes. The evening dulls with classic rock, pool balls clacking at D's, and the hostile jostling from the crowds on Carson Street. Between us, something cracks and drains. Old love, these bricks, steel girders, the sure shellac of mortar is illusion in this city made of every solid thing. But it's man-made, darling, man-made. And that's where all the crumbling begins. I went to this fabulous exhibit at the Carnegie years ago. I don't know how many years, time is weird to me now. But they had an exhibit called The Industrial Sublime. And the shock of it was all painters who were in love with our pollution way back in the 1900s. And so they came here and lived here deliberately to paint the soot and the smog. And I was just, I'm an environmentalist, so I was like really shocked by this. And so I must have visited that exhibit 20 times. And I wrote down everything in it because I was so fascinated. So this is one little poem I got out of it. Monet did not come to Pittsburgh, but he did love the smog in London. This is called The Industrial Sublime, and it's after Monet's Waterloo Bridge, 1903. Monet loved the transitory play of time, light, weather evoked by smoke and soot and fog. He called it atmosphere, the true essence of a thriving modern city. His London Waterloo Bridge turn of the century was crystallized by gauzy air, a veil that clarified. Industry revealed as romantic mystery, like how the puddles of rain on city walks allowed the early photographers to shimmer their blacks and grays. Monet sealed beauty in the limits of his palette, silver white, cobalt blue, emerald green, vermilion, dark matter. And about the darker matter of killing smog and gasping lungs, water too full of sludge to drink, toxic spew was tempered into dream. To see the air was new, was magical, an alluring invitation, hidden tryst behind a wavering mirage. The fog in London assumes so many colors, marveled Monet. The stench of industry turned to a glossy splash of light on mist, on smog, a toxic spew tempered into a dream. So I have one in that series that is an actual man who worked in the mills talking, but I'm too frightened to read it to a Pittsburgh audience. So I've read it privately to friends who grew up in Pittsburgh, and I said, no, it's good, it sounds, you know, but I'm never probably gonna read it at a reading. I'm afraid someone will throw something at my hands. I have a couple of pandemic poems here. I know most of us really want to pretend it's gone and it's over and it's normal, but for some of us, including me, it doesn't feel over yet, partly because it took my mother's mind away. So this is called The Summer of Nectarines. And it was written in the summer of 2020. The summer of nectarines was a terrible one. Plague on the winds, in the air, on our tongues, in the midst of old conversations, set within millions of homes, exhausted lamps flicked on and off and on again, all hours. Somewhere, the sound of an infant's wail thick in the limbs of the sycamores. Somewhere, a dog's bark caught in his throat. And the drought-fried grass hosted no fireflies, and the promise of thunderstorms never fulfilled. Someone delivered fruit to me on the porch, nectarines, oddly noble in their blue plastic bags, as if they were already past, objects in an oil painting, maroon and peach solid with sheen. Somewhere a piano struck, somewhere a cat stretched her long limbs awake. Somewhere a face on a screen like a comet's tail, lit, dissipating. Books tried to intervene, comfort, offer of visions, the old world in a fervent embrace, and heat bore down like the former days of rainstorms. Although this year, look at this. Honeybees went up in whirls of smoke from the lawns. Outside, people rushed by, their apocalyptic eyes darting towards you in a way. Head down, run on. The hose water day and night so that something might thrive. Why not zinnias? Why not asters? In the kitchen, the fruit unknotted itself, melted down in the heat, mealy and bruised. But still in the shrillness of multiple fans, the kitchen erupted in nectarine fragrance. And so too the whole house. And so too the whole day. Thank you. I always allow myself an indulgent poem. This is it. It's one of my leaping poems that will probably make no sense to an audience. I'm aware of that, but I want to read it. I'm sorry. So I allow myself one reading. This is it. It is a pandemic poem. I think I'm trying to evoke a mood more than have you follow its not narrative. It's called 3 years in. I don't know which breaking builds the easier life or the larger fire. Twigs snapped as kindling, so fragile, fractal. This branch of a pine, its needles prick my arm as I run past, and I'm supposed to be grateful, right? But I'm still caught in this net, such battening down with only the chronic dreams of my younger lover who left moons ago for Alaska to haunt me. Dust, ephemera, the years as changeable as tides, ebb and flow and ebb, past. Sea glass, that gift of glint from a morning walk, has always eluded me, as have so many answers I've been seeking all my life. In his madness, Hamlet shouted, "Bury like a whale." And those enormous, beauteous beasts felt untouchable then, but have found themselves beached and dying in this ugly new world. And because I cannot sit idly by and simply be a witness to the dying world, I have turned as feral as a dumpster cat, screech and scratch and claw. Who to trust? When to kindle laughter? When to kindle fire and with whom? Brittle, brittle goes this canticle of distance. It's funny when you read it out loud, it's angrier than I thought it was. Like I could feel it when I hear it, like, oh, okay, this is an angry poem. But sometimes you don't know it when you're writing it. This is a poem I just like because, you know, when you don't have family around during a hunkering down COVID pandemic, you fall in love with birds. So that is what I did. So this is called Sparrow. What changes now that I no longer call them small brown birds? Now that I've studied them, this one's gold-flecked wings, that one's tail pointing pertly skyward. Now that I've sorted song from song, beak from beak, flight from flight, attending to their glossary of difference. Nothing changes in the world if I say Vesper Sparrow, Bunting, Carolina Wren, or Lark. They're still sloppy in the seeds, skittish with new shadow. They still drop down from the gutters and swell the Rose of Sharon branches early morning, late evening. Seaside Sparrow, Cape Sable, they're on their way in half past Icarus, squabbling over suet. How does it transform the crowd to recognize the individual? I once heard someone say, if you call it a field, no one fights against the men who gut it to make a parking lot. So I call it meadow. Try to know the names of its inhabitants, the bee-drunk hyssop, the buttercups and daisy fleabane, echinacea and clover, wild geraniums, and a crowd of wind-tossed colors live to drink the sun. Those jittery throngs are no longer mud-blurred browns and tans, but gold-crowned, cinnamon, white-rumped snowfinch, and the world feels far less lonely. Don't worry, I don't have all of these. I know where I'm stopping. There's my stuff. So I have three to go. This is called Clarity. Another one, I want to hear it. Sometimes poets do this, and telling you the truth, we want to work something out in front of an audience just to see if we need more. I suspect this needs something in the ending, but I also dedicated to my dog, Beowulf, who is now dying of cancer. He was the best companion during COVID, so it is heartbreaking to me that he has cancer at this point. It's called Clarity. Stars bright in the alleyway, dark pocket of the neighborhood, guttered leaves. The dog sniffs the slushy shadows beneath fences. Dog, I say, the grass is lost without the light. My morning thoughts snag and dangle from the crescent moon as we stand on one of the last brick roads in Pittsburgh. Dog noses something, looks up quizzically. Oh, those are glow sticks, dog. I laugh, watching him probe them with his paws. Remember months ago, all those trick-or-treaters you barked away? Black walnut tree heaves, cracks nuts on the sidewalk. We both startle, streetlights halo down. dog, I say, look at us, we're saints, so holy in this circling light. Dog doesn't bat an eye, he tugs me forward. Moon's about to tip, stars slip, stick to the, that's a tongue twister, stars slip, stick to the tips of the sycamore's branches. I'm all in. Pre-dawn imagination kindles. Dog starts to trot up Cromwell Street, stops only once to lift his leg on his favorite box hedge. Too early yet for the throngs of crows above. Slow down, dog, it's all in motion. Look, first feathering of the new light. The dog disdains all metaphor. He takes a long whiff of a small pile of leaves. I want to hold to the hushed world without cars and voices, without other humans, no yen to join my workday life. Dog pauses. He lifts his head and sniffs the rose-dipped dawn. Ever the pragmatist, he brings me home.
Thank you. So just two more.
This is one of my little environment poems. I have in the book that I just wrote, I have an essay about this. Like, I'm really grappling with how do you tell the story of the environment to make people give a shit? Because there's a lot of people don't give a shit because we have so much else we're worried about, right? We're overwhelmed. There's like, look here and look here and look there. So this is just a kind of a sweet, silly poem, but it's a poem thinking like, I was watching neighbors who were like spraying herbicide all over dandelions. And I was like, oh, for God's sake, why? You know, these are bees' first food. I want to say this, but of course it makes you very unpopular in the neighborhood if you're the one going around saying things like that. So I decided instead to shrink myself like Alice in Wonderland did in a poem, and I am looking up at a dandelion. It's called Sharon in Wonderland, Dandelion. I've now grown small enough to slip beside the grass blades in the lawn and near the glassy filigree of dandelions gone to seed. 12 dandelions cluster around, apostolic, dun, abundant teachers. I tread gently. The lacy pappus ring around the flower head, the stem a swan's neck tilting with the breeze. The view from down here, look. The widening ladder of the leaves, the toothy angles of a single edge. Would it hold me if I tried to climb it? The view from here, a prophecy of how the light, wind, earth conspire to play their role in dandelions flourishing, mighty suns atop such molten stems, then aids them in their vanishing. Their final legacy, a whimsy rain of seed. I want to rest my head against the stem and hear the water flow from root to petal head. I want to taste the deep green leaf that sways beneath this open sky, whose skeleton looks more like a starling's wing than member of an aster family. But I've been given so much. Drink me, I was told. And so I have slaked my thirst on nature's boundless variety, and I've done so gratefully. Far above me, the seed heads a breathless orb, a nebulae eviscerated by the breeze, a whiskered bridge, a silver salvo, a dawn of stars. That's how I want you to think about Vandal. Thank you. And my last one is a kind of love poem. It is a love poem. It's called How Love Meets the Morning Like Glass. There is rain that doesn't know me, though it slides like fingers down my skin, a shivering. Your finger on my spine, the glide of it turns me to river. Morning comes and you follow an old tabby down the alleyway and vanish into morning fog. Still, the rain's a glass. I see greenhouse around my life, a site for the small fireworks of zinnias and a twining forest of ivy, weeds, rose of Sharon. Once you said to me, I don't say love, can't say love. It's a word that falls in splinters everywhere like glass. And I nodded, I know, I know. I did not know. It was nonsensical to me, like how sand and lime combines to form the green glass bird upon my kitchen shelf, and how, just after I admired the 5 p.m. light swirling gold within its belly, I dropped it on the tile floor. Sun spilled out everywhere, a mess. Once rain of nourishment, not of floods, drains and sewers afterwards, the overflow, the spiraling down was memorable, but so too was the fevered rise, our bodies twined so tight, we feared we'd lose ourselves, and then we lost ourselves. Furtive nights of parrying, mornings where coffee burnt our tongues and sunrise cold and blistering. But love is not defined by how it turns out in the end. Our hours of joy on wooded trails, the fallen mounds of gold, we were tossed coins and old enough to know better. We both craved, oh, I don't know what we wanted then. And now I've grown much closer to the weeds. They're mad in love with August. I leave them all alone to thrive and let the rain have its way with everything. Thank you.